Buy low, sell high. Very easy to say, but not always so easy to do. For example, high interest rates are hurting the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices in a lot of markets are falling, even for many of the best assets. So it's no wonder the Fundrise flagship fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its $1 billion real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise flagship fund to your portfolio in just minutes and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/pockets. Fundrise.com/pockets. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise flagship fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.
The dream of owning a vacation home can be daunting. From finding the best guests, to the maintenance, to organizing the cleaners after every guest day. With Vacasa, they make that dream into a reality. As a full-service vacation home management company with vacation homes in key destinations across the U.S., they know a thing about how to make owning a vacation home easy and profitable. On top of proactive property maintenance visits by professional local teams, a hospitality-driven booking platform, and around-the-clock support, Vacasa earns homeowners an average of 20% more revenue from their vacation homes. Vacasa is always thinking of ways to simplify the vacation home owning experience by putting your home to work for you. If you're looking to make more from your vacation home, work with the reliable property manager, and finally have peace of mind, partner with Vacasa at vacasa.com/biggerpockets. That's vacasa.com/biggerpockets.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
What's up, everyone? This is Dave Meyer, your host for On The Market. And today we have a super cool show for you. We are bringing on three different super experienced lenders to help us all understand the state of the borrowing and lending market for 2023. As we all know, we've talked about ad nauseum for the last year or whatever. Interest rates have been going up, and that has really shifted the types of loans that are available, the way that mortgage companies are working. And as an investor, it's really helpful to understand the intricacies of the mortgage industry because it helps you get better loans and just become a better borrower, find better products that are more aligned with your real estate investing strategy. So it's a super cool episode. We have a great lineup of people who are on. And just as a recommendation, if you are looking for a lender or want to understand more, check out biggerpockets.com/loans. It's completely free. There's great places where you can connect with lenders who are specifically working and geared towards investors. So it's not just conventional loans where you can find things like a debt service coverage ratio loan or different bridge financing options. So definitely check that out because you're going to hear about some of these different loan products that are available for investors that aren't really meant for conventional home buyers. And if you hear something on this episode that you're really interested in and want to learn more about, biggerpockets.com/loans is a great way to do that. So with that, I'm going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with our lender panel.
Spring into healthier habits this season with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Their fresh, never-frozen meals are chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. It's delicious without the dishes. With more daylight, sometimes it can be easy to lose track of time and get behind on things like dinner prep, but not anymore. Factor's 35 weekly options include different diets like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or vegan and veggie meals. And they keep you fueled and feeling good no matter your schedule. If you're looking for gourmet meals, Factor has those too. You can try meals with premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, and broccolini. You can customize your meals with the flexibility to get as little or as much as you need. And discover more than 60 add-ons you can have every week, like breakfast or on-the-go lunch, snacks, beverages. So no matter what, you're always eating right. Head to factormeals.com/market50 and use code MARKET50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code MARKET50, MARKET50, at factormeals.com/market50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Let's all welcome in our lending panel today. I'd love you all to just go and explain a little bit about your specialty and who you are. And Christian Batchelder, could you please, let's start with you.
Yeah, absolutely. First and foremost, appreciate you inviting me here and happy to take part in it. I'm Christian. I am David Green's business partner, co-owner, and founder, and managing broker of The One Brokerage, which, you know, it's been mentioned a number of times, but I think I'm the only broker here. So kind of cool. We're getting a kind of varying stance on the market. So excited to take part in it.
Awesome. Great. And in that role, do you mostly focus on residential real estate or lending? Do you have any particular niche?
Yeah, we're definitely a little bit of a, we got a lot of tree branches kind of branching off from the main one. If I had to say what our trunk was, so to speak, though, absolutely 1-4 residential is the majority of our business. While we do have commercial programs and, you know, kind of a wide variety of kind of niches that we can branch off into, 1-4, anywhere from conventional through DSCR and, you know, kind of more creative loan products when someone doesn't qualify conventionally is definitely our bread and butter.
All right. Awesome. Matt Neisser, how about you?
Yeah, thanks for having us. Appreciate it, Dave. Thank you. Matt Neisser, I'm CEO and co-founder of Lending One. We're a national lender for investors around the country. So 40-some states. We specialize both in, it's all 1-4 family, largely a little bit of multifamily, but let's assume all 1-4. And a lot of long-term rentals. So we specialize in lending to landlords and also a little bit of fix and flip and short-term type lending programs. I think where we probably excel is the long-term lending, 30-year fixed rate loans, comparable to a little bit different than a conventional lender, a little bit easier to get qualified. And then we have a larger program for large investors, non-recourse, large portfolios of properties up to, say, $50 million.
Awesome. Great. And then for our final guest today, we have Bill Tesser.
Thank you, Dave. Bill Tesser, president and CEO of Civic Financial. Similar to Matt's company, we're a national lender, specialized really in a handful of products. Your DSCR products, which is really 5, 7, and 10-1 IOs, your bridge and fix and flip and multifamily as well. Balance is probably 45%. Bridge, 45% rental, and about 10% multifamily. And I think it's just under 40 states.
Wow, that's awesome. Well, it sounds like we have a great wealth of experience here for lending. And this is something we've really wanted to dive into on the show. You know, as investors, we deal with lenders and work with lenders all the time. But in hearing from you, we'd love to know your insights into the industry and sort of what we can expect over the coming year or so. So Bill, let's start with you. How would you say the rising interest rate environment over the last 9 months has impacted your business?
I think the first thing I'd say is it had a huge impact on our industry. So not just when I say industry, I mean the whole lending industry. So if you think about it from a conventional side, and I spent the first 30 years of my career on the conventional side and developed a lot of long-term relationships there. And it literally gutted that industry, probably second only to the financial crisis. And in many of these instances, they had volume levels down 80, 90%. They couldn't, you know, cut their way out of those problems. I think that continues. As it relates to our space, I think Matt would agree that a lot of the smaller folks, medium-sized folks, really took it on the chin. They had a whole bunch of loans sitting on their warehouse lines that got retraded by their capital partners. And so, you know, they go into those trades above par and they come out significantly under. So some of those trades are still taking place right now as Wall Street picks through those portfolios. So I think it really screwed up the capital markets on the BPL side and forced the companies that are still around really to reset and find a pricing level that could at least be at par. So they were originating for origination fees and junk fees. And I think the level is there now. I think you're starting to see it's the beginning of the year, more of those Wall Street guys coming back into the market. And I think it's actually pretty darn good for some of the folks that are still around. But yeah, I mean, big shakeup, Dave. And probably still a little more to come on some of those peripheral lenders that are, you know, hanging on by a thread.
Matt, are you seeing something similar?
Yeah, I mean, I largely agree with Bill. I think, you know, the fortunate part for probably both of us is there's been a sort of demise line of large lenders and smaller lenders and sort of the in-between. Probably if you were small or large, you're probably okay. If you were in the in between, it was probably much more challenging for those folks. But as it relates to borrowers, I think it's a big reset on the way that you look to underwrite a deal. And probably for the audience here, if I rewind 12 months ago, I started in January of last year, and we had rates in the fours, basically 30-year fixed, which I guess when I started the business, I thought would have been crazy. And then that ended up happening, and people were excited and people were buying stuff and could afford to probably pay the premiums that were out there to buy properties. And I think the big shift that's happened is now that rates, not just ours, it's really across the whole mortgage industry, as a conventional rate at, you know, tipping to 7% last year is a huge shakeup, both for us as lenders and investors as a whole, as to how do we navigate? And I think that's really what a lot of investors were struggling with, of what do I do in my strategy? Does it have to shift? How do I navigate rates going from 4.5 to 7? And that happening very quickly. I think probably the quickest it's ever happened in history. So that's what I think really this uncertainty is what created so much uncertainty for borrowers and investors, understanding like what am I going to do into 2022? We do feel like most people have now sort of come to the realization this is a new normal at this point and are adjusting their strategy. And we've started seeing that last quarter. I think Q2, Q3, people were just confused and didn't know what to do, really, frankly. So that's what we've seen.
If you think about what Matt says, I think the stats on a typical investor going into the rate increase was making about $67,000 a transaction in and out, all in return on their investment. So if you think about rates going up, let's just say 200 basis points, in some cases more, but at 200 basis points on $500,000, it's $10,000 of carry for the year. And so now they're making $57,000. And at least what our experience has been is that the investors are still in there. They got people on their payrolls, the bigger firm, the bigger groups. And so they're still going in and making trades. They're negotiating better deals on the buy side. Yeah, their cost of capital is cheaper, but now contractors are coming back into the space and supply chains are a little bit better. So they pick up on some areas, lose on cost of capital. And, you know, 57 isn't a bad number if that's the average return on your investment or transaction. And so we haven't really seen a lot of our investors, man. I don't know about you or Christian, if you guys have seen a lot of your investors completely get out. I think they've just reset expectations, as you mentioned earlier. And, you know, like from a volume perspective, now you have these new rate levels, we really haven't seen a dip off, that's probably the biggest surprise for me. Like I, at least mentally, I was rethinking the way 23 would look like from a volume perspective, but I actually think it's still going to be good. And I think just everyone's reset expectations and living with the new norm.
Yeah. I was thinking as you were talking, and I think there's a added layer to it too, that especially us three, I know we're all very like investor focused, right? We're, you know, with bigger pockets, we're like, you know, trying to be in this realm. And I think there's been a concentration of buyers into the people who are knowledgeable, and, you know, not everybody's able to just, oh, I have $10,000 increased carrying cost. You know, nope, not everybody's capable of adjusting their plans to, you know, accomplish still success in that realm, right? And that's why I think, you know, when we're talking about the large and the small lenders, typically that it's all the people who kind of just did the in-between loans as well, right? Not just the volume wise, but it's the in-between loans of maybe the intermediate experience, right? Maybe the non-experience, but really fine-tuning systems. Like you said, they may be making extra premium on, you know, maybe they're saving on contractors. Maybe they're saving on, you know, the supply chain's cheaper, the cost of, you know, wood is cheaper, whatever it is, right? And experienced investors and people who have been through the trials and tribulations of what I know you guys do a lot of fix and flips. With me, it's, you know, running accurate numbers on rentals, right? Running accurate numbers on maybe short-term rentals, right? Being able to, you know, educate yourself on, man, what is this market compacted, or Is there something unique that can be, you know, taken advantage of here with the right staging? I think really, I haven't seen a pullback, but I've definitely seen a concentration into a fewer number of hands, which I think is a really interesting market trend.
So Christian, you're saying that total volume is remaining at a pretty steady state, but it's just fewer people taking on higher volume per person or per investor?
Yeah, I don't want to misconvey. Volume just on a grand total is down, but volume per investor, if that's a metric that I could use, is definitely up.
It is now.
Yeah, so I just think there's a larger amount happening per person that we work with, which is kind of interesting when you think of total volume being down, but volume per person, you know, I can't think of a whole lot of people that we're doing our very first loan for. Like, so many of our clients are repeats. So many of our clients are experienced. They know what they're doing. They've run their numbers. And, you know, just like Bill shared, you know, that extra $10,000 holding costs, if they're making 57 versus 67, a lot of investors still take that, right? And they just pivot their numbers a little bit and they find a way to make it work, right? So that's an interesting trend that I've seen kind of take place in our firm, you know, kind of encapsulated there.
One thing I'm curious about, given what you're saying about investor activity, all three of you, is are the types of loans and loan products that investors are interested in changing at all? Matt, let's start with you.
Yeah, I think a little bit is the answer. And depending on their strategy coming into the year last year, and you know, what if they were building a rental portfolio and relying on what a lot of clients, and you know, I see on Bigger Pockets quite a bit, is sort of like the Burr strategy, coming in, buying, renovating, hopefully refinancing, and then pulling equity out. I think the biggest shift I've seen is the challenge of them actually getting equity out at this point to keep that velocity going that they were had before or got a little bit accustomed to. Whereas I think 3 or 4 years ago, I don't think the perception was that every deal I did, I'd pull out all my equity. I think it was every deal, at least I kept some equity in the deal. And I think that mentality changed a little bit, particularly with COVID, when prices were appreciating so rapidly that people got accustomed for 2022 is basically I got to pull out equity on every single deal and just keep on going. Now, that isn't a true product shift, but I've seen that shift of on the back end refinance them trying to evaluate, okay, can I keep the same deal level up on the buy side that I kept up a year or 2 years ago effectively? So that's the one thing I am noticing a little bit. And, you know, honestly, values are down in some markets 5 or 10% already. I don't think it's on all markets, clearly, but you're seeing both values in a little bit, or at least more conservative values from appraisers. And then you have this, you know, LTVs, and they're might have to bring a little bit of money to close. And that's a strange concept for a lot of people that have been doing transactions the last few years. Although,
imagine that.
You go back 5 years ago, that was like, you know, you expected it.
Yeah, I can piggyback on that for sure. I can't tell you how many times we've had the conversation of, is a Burr a fail if I don't 100% cash out the funds I invested? And it's like, no, man, you know, you're getting 60% of it back. Make that keep rolling, right? It doesn't make the strategy completely null and void. It's just, you know, it's a pivot, right?
Yeah, I think what we've seen is, if I do a 24-month look back, we were heavy bridge and fix and flip, and then really became super heavy on the rental. I think part of the success, and Matt, you probably saw this too, but we inherited a bunch of loans and customers where lenders just couldn't deliver at the closing table. And so, you know, was that really organic growth, or were, you know, did we have staying power, right place, right time? Probably the latter, right? And so we saw a big swing in the rental units, not volume, units through 2022, almost to like 65%. So I think like we closed just about $3 billion last year, and 65% of that was rental. The last quarter and going into this quarter, looking at the pipeline, what we're seeing our investors do right now is they're just paying the higher WAC on the bridge because they don't want to get locked into a prepay in these, you know, high coupon rental loans, believing that rates are going to come down in the very near future. And, you know, whether that's true or not, I mean, I do get it. Matt, I don't know if you or Christian heard the last
the last conference I was at, the IMN conference, and they were talking about new products. And one of the products that's been floated around there is kind of a hybrid between the rental with the prepay and the bridge. So a little bit lower WAC than bridge, a little higher than rental, no prepay component. So people could kind of go into Nomad land for a little bit and decide whether rates are going up or down. Probably going down long term, but you know, this quarter, a little rocky. But yeah, so like right now we're 50-50 on bridge to rental. We've seen a big swing recently.
And WAC, just for listeners, is weighted average cost of capital, right?
Yeah, weighted average coupon. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, coupon. Yeah. Okay.
My wife always says, I'm talking to my boys that are in, we're talking at the table, and she goes, you guys sound like you're, you know, foreigners. And
no, I just want to make sure I'm tracking. Yeah. And then, you know, with Christian, I'm especially curious in the residential space, like I hear a lot about sellers buying down rates for people. Are you seeing that pretty frequently?
Oh yeah. I think last month we did a little internal audit. I think we got on our purchases, I think we got seller credits on like 90% of them.
Oh wow.
I mean, it was like that level where, and I mean, granted, that's like the realtors that we work with, we help coach them too. Like, hey, we have a 2-1 buy down program. Like, go negotiate seller credit, right? The sellers, you know, the house has been on the market for 90 days, right? Like it kind of becomes the obvious trend once a couple of realtors pick up on it. But especially if our borrowers are also coached, right? So they're advising the realtor, hey, I want to get the interest rate from 8 months ago, you know, 12 months ago, whatever it is, right? And even though that, you know, it's the 2-1 buy down program is a short, you know, a temporary buy down. Right. So that's a really big product right now in the conventional space where, you know, the first year you're 2% lower, the second year you're 1% lower. And there's even a 3-2-1 buy down that's gets a little expensive at that point. But they're really cool products and we're utilizing it a lot. And I know, I think even you guys, Bill, I don't know if Civic's got a buy down. So everybody understands I'm a broker. I actually work with both Civic and Lending One. So we're on their wholesale space. So I'm somewhat familiar with their products, but I don't know if you guys are seeing more of those. I don't know if you guys are implementing buy down programs, but that's my experience.
You know, the loans are expensive on the BPL side anyways. On the conventional side, if you start with a little bit of rebate, then you get the par, then you buy into through points. It's a little different than maybe what Matt or I get to see, because people are paying quite a bit of points if they're going to buy that rate now. The loan still has to have value somewhere. So yeah, I don't see a lot of it. I do believe that on your side, Christian, just having links to, you know, some of the biggest firms in the nation, they have to come out with new products, and they have to come out with new products like right now, or you'll see big companies, publicly traded companies, fall.
100%.
They have to come. The 3-2-1 buy down, graduated payment mortgages, qualifying at the start rate, IOs.
Yeah.
You know, if real estate values weren't so uncertain right now in some areas, you'd see neg am loans work their way back in to the market, as you know, like back in the 2006-2008 time. So I think they have, the only thing conventional space can do to save the majority of the conventional space is come out with products that are exciting for the marketplace to get back in there and buy. And you're doing it right now, Christian, with what you mentioned. More is coming.
Oh yeah.
You know, way to lead the group, but more is coming.
I want to make sure I point that out for any borrowers. That's probably the best said that I've heard it, is that these programs aren't to, a lot of people told us the programs are to like save the housing market, right? Like, you know, have these temporary rate buy downs so people can still pay exorbitant prices. That's not the goal. It's exactly what Bill said. It's like, this is what has to happen, right? There has to be a loan.
To save the lenders, right? That's what you're saying. Not to save, yeah.
In some capacity, yeah. And granted, I mean, these guys are in different, you know, spaces and then in non-QM and bridge and fix and flip. But like the big, I mean, I don't know if you guys heard, like, LoanDepot's wholesale went under, right? I mean, they don't work with brokers anymore, right? I mean, there's these very, very large lenders. I mean, we were talking about, you know, large and small kind of state. There are some big lenders that got out of the space too, you know, the AmeriSaves and LoanDepot wholesale. So there's a little bit to that, Dave. You know, they got to come up with these programs to kind of save face at some point, you know, when they go in the right direction.
So that it sounds like, just to make sure everyone's tracking this, there are programs right now, like a 2-1, where basically you can buy down your interest rate. Christian gave an example where you can buy down your rate by 2% for a year and then 1% And this, the trend that as a listener or as a borrower you can consider is that costs money. You have to buy points to get those reduced interest rates. But the trend is that you have the seller, who's usually a motivated seller in this type of market, buy down those points for you. So you're be able to get your purchase and get a lower interest rate on the seller's dime. But it sounds like what Bill and Christian are saying is that this is just the beginning potentially, and there might be other borrower, attractive loan products that come out for borrowers in the next couple of months. So I'm curious if any of you have recommendations for where listeners can sort of stay on top of this information, like what type of incentives and what type of new products are coming out that might be useful to investors.
I think Christian's doing a pretty good job with his company, but the fact is you won't have to look very far. They'll find you.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, all of us are on BiggerPockets. Like, if you're just in a network or an environment, the information's going to find you if you're even, relatively searching for it, right? Get with a broker, get with a loan officer from one of these guys, from one with my company. It's really something where if you want to stay on, David and I had an episode on our series that we were doing where a new program came out when he was in escrow. That was for the deal. David, I don't know if you were, I think you were in the background that episode after I think they brought you in, but literally as he was in escrow, a program came out and I was like, this is a perfect match for you. And we pivoted, we completely canceled the loan, opened up a new one on an entirely separate product, right? And we only knew that because he was so fine-tuned into what I had to offer, and obviously we're business partners, but I knew what he was looking for, right? So it's communication is key with your loan officers.
Yeah, and I don't actually think it's just lenders trying to solve it. This is being solved at Wall Street. Like, you got a lot of bond traders that don't know what the hell to do with their time. Like, just think about the green backwards. Matt and I were talking about golf earlier, but think about the green backwards. This stuff is being solved in Wall Street right now because there's just no trades on the conventional side. There's no trades. It is tumbleweeds, like the way you would think about an old Western. And so, yeah, I do think they will come out with products. I'm actually quite blown away that the fourth quarter didn't show that, but I think there was so much trauma, and some of that trauma is leaked into the first quarter that, if I'm a gambling man, I would say you're going to see stuff this quarter that is going to be good for the market. And Dave, when I think about 3-2-1 buy downs or 2-1 buy downs, I'm thinking about that as a product. Then you could employ Christian's strategy and you could buy that start rate now. But the product is a 3-2-1 then am for the rest of the 27 years. But you could buy that loan down. And now you're talking about a rate that people can, get their arms around and live with, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Two things about that. First, I think this conversation just underscores the idea that you shouldn't assume just because you've seen a headline what interest rates are right now, that's what you would be paying. And you should actually go out and talk to a broker and see what you can actually get and learn about some of these new products. Let me ask you this, Matt, and I guess all of you, is there an interest rate that you're seeing through some of these new products where people are comfortable? Because it seems like just looking at the market, once it hit 7%, things were going crazy. Things really just halted. Is there do you have a sense of what the sweet spot is where buyers and borrowers are feeling like that's a tolerable rate?
I think it's also like I was indicating before is that if you pencil your deal to start, if I'm underwriting a deal and I'm talking to the investor side, then we'll talk about conventional sort of like I'm a home purchaser looking for my house. If I'm an investor and I underwrite from day one and say the rate's going to be 7%, and I'm able to get 10% off on that deal now that I was overpaying by 5%, 9 months ago or 6 months ago, it's tolerable. It's just more of a mental thing of getting comfortable actually doing that. Now, 3 or 4 months ago, I would say that if the rate was in the sixes, when it got into the sevens, people started to get jumpy because they were used to paying 4 and 5. And then it jumped to 7 or 8. And then when that came back underneath 7, that was a mental trigger, as you're talking about, to say, okay, I'm interested again. But practically, my personal view is if someone's underwriting day one, they can get comfortable with any rate as long as values that they can buy the deal right, right? And that was like the sellers hadn't adjusted yet. I think you're starting to see sellers adjust now. And then on the conventional side, I mean, you're starting to see it. It's like there's not much inventory at all, but you're seeing all the things that were, you are, at least in my markets that I follow, you're seeing price reductions on the listing side. I don't think there's any screaming deals yet, but you're at least you're directionally going the right way. So that's, I think some of it is just a mental breaking point with people and saying, okay, I get it now. I know rates aren't going to be all of a sudden going to be 5% again. It was 6 months ago. I really, half of our borrowers believe this bill was sort of like indicating when things were in sevens or greater, they were still in their minds thinking things would be five, high fives again somehow in like 3 months until the Fed sort of laid out what's happening. And then I think people have started, okay, this is not going to be randomly go back down to 200 basis points in 3 months. So that's what I'm seeing.
I think, Matt, I think it's a bullseye. Like, think about stock market, think about interest rates, think about real estate values. Like, when things are moving around a lot, I always think the smart money just takes a step back and tries to figure out, is this going to continue rattling back and forth or one way or the other, or has it just settled down and they have a new norm? And I think that's right, Matt. Like, interest rate wise, it's perspective. If you look the last 12 months, interest rates suck. If you look at the last 5 years, interest rates are good. If you look at the last 25 years, interest rates could arguably be great. But we lived for 3 years in the most incredible low interest rate market where all of us got to get fat and happy about the originations. And on the conventional side, they were rewriting customers 5 to 7 times over 36 months. Like, hey, Bill, it's Matt. Just want to let you know, I'm going to drop you from 3.25 to 2.75, no point, no fee. Sending the document, sign them, you know, and you get a half a point rate reduction. And they would literally stair step those borrowers down. Those borrowers, for the most part, most of them are never touching those loans unless there's a death, a divorce, or some move up or move down. I actually think you'll see seconds kind of like expanding because no one wants to touch the two or the threes. Yeah. So they'll go be there 7 or 8% on a second. And then 5 years from now, they'll do the cash out refi at the 4.5. Like, so it is, I think you're spot on, Matt. Like, we're seeing the Fed's probably close to being done. This next time, whatever they're going to do, quarter to half, it's probably it. If they just need to say that. Once they say it, then I think you'll see some smart money come back. I mean, the 10-year is better right now. Like, just think about it from perspective of overnight lending rate. We're owned by publicly traded bank. Their overnight cost of funds have gone up significantly. But the 10-year, because I'm a mortgage guy, goes, but it's so much lower than it was 3 rate hikes ago. So it's interesting that way. But I think it tells me that rates are going to come down. If I had a magic bomb telling you end of the year, you're going to see lower rates than we have today, both BPL and the conventional space.
That's a good segue. And just to sort of clarify what Bill's saying here too, is that we've discussed this on the show many times, but what the Federal Reserve controls is the federal funds rate. That does not control mortgage rates. And the much more highly correlated indicator for mortgage rates is the yield on the 10-year treasury. And as Bill was just saying, despite the Fed raising the federal funds rate, the 10-year is back below 4%. I don't know where it is today. I think it was at like 3.7 yesterday or something like that. And so there are indications that loan rates are at least slowing down and could start coming down towards the end of 2023. That's just sort of my take. But and Bill, you just gave yours. Christian, where do you see rates heading over the course of 2023?
Yeah, I'm in agreement with everybody. I think they're a lot more on the capital market side. So I know you guys have like a very intricate understanding, right? Me on the broker side, I'm much more client facing. I obviously keep up with what's going on. What I would say is I think I want to draw it especially to demand and what's really driving clients. I don't think it's an interest rate that everybody's looking for. I think it's just some amount of stability, right? We've been through this 12-month period where it's like, I get pre-approved, and you guys know how long it takes to buy a house. It's, you know, a few days to get pre-approved. your credit's only good for 60 days. You got to go find a realtor. You got to go tour 10 houses. You got to find one you like. You make an offer, right? There's like, there's a process to it. And a lot of times it's 60, 90, 120 days before you have a house. Well, when rates are changing by a point and a half in that time period over a 12-month period, it's like nobody wants to buy because they're like, I go get in love with getting a loan. And by the time I actually get one, we're talking about a 1.5-2% difference in my rate. Right. So I don't think it's a rate everybody's looking for specifically. Like, I don't think it's just a magic, like, if rates are back in the fives, we're ready to go. I think it's just like, can I just have some confidence in what my rate will be at this point? Right. Like, I don't want to change this drastic amount in the time it just goes and takes me to find a house. Right. And I do kind of double down on what everybody's saying. I think obviously the Fed can't do it forever. Right. I do think they're trying to build in wiggle room because, I mean, we got down to 0%, right, at during COVID. Historically they've been able to use dropping interest rates to stimulate the economy, and you can't drop them unless there's some margin to drop them by, right? I that's kind of where I'm thinking, is that they're building it up to a point where they have enough, you know, leverage maybe in the future to potentially stimulate again, and we play this roller coaster on and on and on, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So Matt, one of the other things about rates I'm curious if you have any insight on is, despite the Fed, you know, raising rates, they're doing their thing. The spread between the federal funds rate and at least conventional mortgages, I'm less familiar with the commercial side, is abnormally high right now. Typically, it's like, you know, 170, 190 basis points. I think it's well above 200 still. Can you tell me, like, with you and Bill, your knowledge of the capital markets, can you tell me why it's so much higher and if you think it's going to change in the coming year?
Yeah. There's a number of things going on. As Bill indicated, like, generally bond investors and broadly Wall Street right now in the last Q3, Q4, if it's a mortgage, there's a little bit of uncertainty. And that means buyer liquidity has drained out. Two, you have a historically large and probably unprecedented balance sheet of mortgages held by the government, which never has happened before in terms of the size and scale. So they own, like, I forget if it's $2 or $3 trillion, whatever it is, Bill, maybe somewhere in that handle, I think, of mortgages, and of which at some point they're going to need to sell down or let wind off. People are unsure what that's going to be. So you have this huge net seller of unprecedented size that has never existed before sitting on this inventory that maybe they could sell at some point, that creates a lot of uncertainty. And then three, you have really high rates, which means that when rates are very high, people need to assume that that loan will prepay at some point, and it that creates this inverse.
That's the tricky part. Crazy. Yes,
that's the bullseye right there.
Yep, couldn't agree more.
He's right. Like, that's it. Like, Matt, that's bullseye. People, there's just, think about it. Rates at 7%. Like, who believes that's going to be on the books for 30 years? Who believes that can be booked? I think you have to have a loan on the books for like somewhere between 36 and 40 months to break even if you're a purchaser of conventional loans. I think that's the number-ish. Think about that. Like, who believes a 30-year 6.75 or 7 is going to be on the books? Those suckers are going to, they're going to get a call from Christian the second rate's got.
the three and a half skull all got eaten up when rates went to 2.99. That's, I couldn't agree with that more.
That's right though, Matt. Like, it's, man, it's, those, and here's kind of the scary thing that Matt mentioned earlier. You think about the government, like, if they have that many loans at that low interest rate, it goes back to what we were commenting on earlier, death, divorce, some life-changing event before those people are going to get out of those mortgages. They can't afford a home equal to that. Most people can't when you go up to today's interest rates. And so they just sit, which, you know, put some pressure on real estate inventory and probably helps us with valuations with all the other crap going on. Like, it's really an interesting study, but I think the government's going to have to take it on the chin if they try to start offing some of those mortgages.
That's fascinating. What you said, 36 to 40 months to break even on a loan. And with almost everyone predicting that rates will go down, maybe not in 23, but probably in 24 at least. Or even 25, you know, like, it that's why the lenders are baking in this extra spread. to I guess accelerate that break even point.
And to clarify, just so you know, and everyone understands, the lenders themselves, this is not more profitable for them. Put us aside for a second. We're a sliver of the mortgage market. We all pump our chest and think we're big, but we're like a gnat on this whole mortgage market, right? So if you got the whole mortgage market, like those folks are not more profitable right now. Even with those spreads the way they are the least profitable they've been in a long time, because they're not the ones taking that margin. It's just a risk premium built into the market, and they're selling their loans immediately, and their margins are the worst they've ever been. So it's a weird dynamic right now.
It went from being the greatest business to be in, if you were the Loan Depot wholesale or the FOA biggies that were printing profits quarterly, like printing hundreds of millions of dollars. They couldn't cut quick enough. So it's the bigger ones are really suffering.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of, there's like three lenders that we partner with where we have the same account executive as 12 months ago. Like there's not very many. Account executive is like we have over 150 lender partnerships.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, it's like account executives have gotten axed across the board. And it's funny, both of these guys actually have the same person. it's just wild to me that exactly like Bill said, there is just they cut. They just cut the moment it turned. That's definitely failed.
Well, Matt's right. Like if you take the biggest three lenders in our space, those lenders do as much in a year as some of these guys were doing in a week. Like it's just not, you know, apples and turnips.
Yeah.
Well, this has been fascinating and I've learned quite a lot, but unfortunately we do have to get out of here, but we'd love to hear just from each of you advice you have for borrowers and investors heading into this year and how to navigate the, you know, rapidly changing debt markets here. So Christian, let's start with you. Do you have any words of wisdom?
Yeah, I think pretty much every time I've been asked, I've always answered the same way. If you hear less people are maybe successful in real estate, less people, crypto, stock market, whatever it is, if you're surrounding yourself with knowledge and you know, people who are well-versed in the space, you're going to have the right guidance to be in that top 10, 20% of producers. And those are the people who make money in the hard times, right? I mean, there's still people having success in the stock market right now. It's probably the better people, right? The people who are more knowledgeable, the people who are more informed, the people who have more access. Whereas, you know, I mean, there's people still succeeding in short-term rentals, right? Even though a lot of markets are impacted and a lot of markets are shutting them down. Like the people who are well-educated and well-versed on how to run them successfully thrive throughout those times. So surround yourself with it. Listen to stuff like this. Get with me, get with Bill, get with Matt. I mean, get with people who are industry, you know, professionals in the space and they know what they're doing. And that's all you can really do is put yourself in the best position to win. And if you win, then it's not a surprise, right?
Awesome. Great. What about you, Bill?
Yeah. So look, I've sat on so many of these panels throughout the year. And at the last 6 months, I kind of felt like I was a individual on an island by myself. Like I've heard all the doom and gloom, heard the inflation, heard the recession, heard real estate values pull back. I've heard all of that stuff, but we're close to 6 million homes underwater in terms of supply and demand. And if you believe any of this stuff I said earlier about low interest rates and those people not refinancing or selling out of those transactions, I think it'll exasperate the problem. So I am like really bullish on real estate, short and long term. I think you can get a better deal today than you could 6 months. You could negotiate a little bit. You could demand a little bit more. You're not paying over list price. You're getting contingencies on your deals. You're getting seller concessions on points. You're getting all that stuff.
Damn.
That's great. So I'm bullish on real estate. And if I was to give a recommendation, I think you got to get your partnerships in line. So you hook up with a company like Matt's or ours on the BPL side. You hook up with a company like Christian's on the conventional. You get a kick-ass realtor. You get some kick-ass contractors. You get some good vendor relationships. And I think partnerships today will make a big difference as we go through 23 and 24 in terms of what investors believe is successful or not.
Awesome. Great. Well, Matt, take us out. What's your advice for any borrowers this coming year?
The one thing I'd say to borrowers, I say to myself, is I try not to bet on interest rates, okay? Because it's one of the craziest things in the world to bet on. So it's not an all or nothing decision you're making. If you're out there buying 10 properties over the next 2 years, or multiply that by however big you are, you can spread that decision over 10 or 20 decisions over the next 2 years. So you don't have to, you're not making one big bet. Okay, this month, I don't know, maybe my rate's a little bit higher than it should have been, but maybe next month or 3 months from now, it's a little bit lower than it was. And you're really just like, if you've heard the concept of dollar cost averaging in stock market, I don't look at it that dissimilarly to borrowing, is that you just need to look at it over a couple year period and say, all right, I won some, I lost some, what's my average over that time frame? And I'm comfortable and the deal's still pencil. That's the way I look at it.
That's great advice. I like that a lot. All right. Well, thank you all. Matt, where can people connect with you if they want to learn more?
Sure. LendingOne.com. We'll take care of you. Just call in. You can call in. You'll get someone live. We're staffed all the time, so it's probably the easiest.
All right. Great. What about you, Bill?
CivicFS.com.
All right. And Christian?
Same thing, theonebrokerage.com. All of us are just companyname.com. Yeah, all of us are pretty easy to find. We're all on BiggerPockets, too.
Making it easy.
Yeah, we're all on BiggerPockets if you go to the Find a Lender tool as well. BiggerPockets is an awesome resource to get to find someone.
All right, thank you. Well, appreciate you all being here and sharing your insight and experience. And hopefully we'll have you on again sometime soon.
Good stuff, guys. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you guys.
All right, big thanks to Christian, Bill, and Matt for sharing their insight and knowledge with us. That was super interesting. I learned a lot. And I think the main thing I want to reiterate, and this is something people ask me all the time, they're like, what interest rate should I be looking for? Or I don't think I qualify for this kind of loan or this kind of loan. And they ask me, and I have no idea. So I really think that in this type of environment, it's super important to just connect with a lender. Even if you don't do a deal, just go call two or three of them. As we just learned on this show, people are getting interest rates in the 5% using seller buy downs and buying points. And there's all these different products that lenders are coming up with to incentivize people to buy right now and to borrow right now. And so don't just assume because you see some headline either in the media or in the newspaper or whatever that says that interest rates are at 7%. There are different products available, especially for investors, than just those top line things. So that was my number one takeaway from this, is just talk to someone and see if your assumptions are right, or learn more about some creative ways to potentially borrow on any of the deals that you're looking to do over the coming year. So that's it for us today. I hope you found this episode helpful. If you did, we really appreciate a 5-star review on either Apple or Spotify. If you have any questions about this episode, you can find me on either BiggerPockets or on Instagram, where I'm at TheDataDeli. Thank you all so much for listening. We'll see you next time for On the Market.
On the Market is created by me, Dave Meyer, and Kaylin Bennett. Produced by Kaylin Bennett. Editing by Joel Esparza and Onyx Media. Research by Pooja Jindal, and a big thanks to the entire BiggerPockets team. The content on the show On the Market are opinions only. All listeners should independently verify data points, opinions, and investment strategies.
There's a reason why small multifamily investing is so popular in the BiggerPockets community. With just a 3.5% down payment, you can own up to 4 different units. Think about it. If you house hack and live in one of the units, you still have 3 different groups of tenants helping you pay down your mortgage each month, 4 kitchens and bathrooms you could renovate to increase your property value, 4 different Airbnbs, medium-term rentals, or other rental strategies you can try in one property, all in just one transaction. Of course, the question is, where do you find a small multifamily property you can afford? Which market and which deal is best for you? Once you close, how do you manage it, optimize it, keep scaling and living your life without being tied down by 4 leaky toilets or 4 fussy tenants? All great questions. All to be answered in the upcoming Small Multifamily Bootcamp with Chris Lopez and Lika Devatha. So, if you're serious about growing your portfolio with this highly efficient strategy, head to biggerpockets.com/4 today and join us in the Small Multifamily Bootcamp. That's biggerpockets.com/4. See you there.